Get Out the Room is back. Get Out the Room, episode 78. We're almost to 80. There's no way we'll make it to 100 this year. But we will be balling if we get 85. But as you can hear, I got my people with me. As always, the man riding shotgun, and Scott, what's going on?
Oh, not much, not much. My alma mater got beat tonight. It hurt me.
Y'all was looking good until the fourth quarter started.
I know.
Then y'all got washed.
Yeah. Turned into an ass whooping.
Yeah, it did. Like, you need to open up an Oktoberfest because that shit is chill, bro. It's a wrap.
Hey, Oktoberfest is actually happening in the city here in about a couple weeks, too, so that's convenient.
Yeah, so for all you ignorant fucks who think Oktoberfest happens in October, it is actually a September event that looks forward to October.
And the second biggest one in the world is in Cincinnati.
Oh, some good fucking trivia. Get off my dick. and the third voice you heard, I know some of y'all didn't even recognize it because you heard him so goddamn long. But the greatest American hero, Tone's back. What's going on, brother?
I see you got jokes. All right. I see.
Look, I didn't even bring up nothing else. I just let it sit. I'm not even going to pull no receipts.
Okay, we can stop it right there. We can stop it right there.
I'm not even going to pull no receipts. We just going to keep it how it is. No wig snatching tonight. We just going to keep it cool. How's that sound?
Let's do that.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. But, you know, as the weather turns...
Good. You ain't no good.
But you know I ain't no good. I ain't never been no good. That ain't going to change today. But look, people, as the weather turns crisp, what ends up happening is we can all look forward to the new horror that's coming out. And right now, there is some really great stuff popping up. And one of those things is a little film that kind of slid under the radar. I caught it on by chance that I was looking through some horror previews. And it's a movie called I Am Not a Serial Killer. And, you know, just happenstance, checked it out, and it absolutely blew me away. Yeah. Fellas, y'all want to get into this a little bit?
Oh, we're playing bluff. We're going to call my bluff. Yeah, Tony, you set it up.
Okay. So, essentially, the setup, and I'm going to try... very hard not to spoil this, so you loyal listeners know that when we don't spoil, that means it's good.
Yeah.
This is grade A quality. So Basically what I'm going to say is this. We have a young man who is struggling with mental health issues come across a supernatural event that he, again, struggles to reconcile with what's really going on in his life. And... it's really good. It's dark. I don't want to say it's subtle, but what I will say is it's appropriate. It's not bombastic. This isn't a movie that comes over and beats you over the head.
Yeah. Some of the acting is subtle.
It's very grounded. And you might end up rooting for the bad guy with this one. I'm just going to give y'all a little warning. You might end up wanting the bad guy to win on this joint.
Yeah, but that's also subjective. Who is the bad guy in this movie?
Well, I mean, you know, Freddy, so.
Yeah, Scott, go ahead.
I was going to say, that to me is the better question. There's a moment in the movie where I think you're on one side, and then when this moment happens, you kind of become conflicted.
Yep.
And when that happened, and I was a little confused when that happened at first.
Yeah, I had no clue why that was happening.
I think we're talking about the same thing.
We're all talking about the same thing. It was like that was right. Was wildly unnecessary. Yes. It felt unnecessary at the time that it was happening. And you're like, wait a minute, why would you do this?
That's when the conflict starts. And that's when you kind of, you get a little bit of, you feel a little bit of remorse for who you were feeling was the villain of the piece.
Yep.
And
yes.
it's... But that's also, it's also kind of compelling because in the end, the real question is, you know, how do I feel about this?
Yep.
You know, who do I like?
Yep.
And that's one of the best parts of this film. Yeah, it is.
You know, the thing is, the way the film is set up, you just don't expect ambiguity in any way, shape, or form.
Not at all.
There are a couple of interpersonal scenes with the main character within his regular life in high school that are absolutely bone-chilling and yet super entertaining to watch play out. You know what I mean?
Like the cardboard box scene.
I know exactly the scene you're talking about.
The dance.
Yeah, the cardboard box.
Yes.
Yes.
That right there, I was like, holy fucking shit. That is so cold-blooded.
But again, you can't even be mad because it's not like it's unprovoked. Like, right. It's very, very, very provoked.
Yeah. Yeah. This is his answer. And the thing is, at this point, you're actually like, yeah, give it to him. Let him know what's popping.
Mm-hmm.
Let him know what he's
doing. No, it's a classic case of when keeping it real goes wrong.
Exactly.
Like, he was not real enough for that conversation.
Exactly. Like, he dumped into the deep end and didn't realize that pool ain't had no bottom. It was like,
exactly.
Oh, shit. I can't swim.
Exactly.
I can't swim. Mama, help. I can't swim.
For real. Deep water.
You're like, this is some bullshit. You know, Scott, if there was one aspect of the film that you... that was, you know, just truly caught you off guard, because I didn't give you any setup for this.
That's true, and usually whenever you tell me a movie about this, the first thing I do is look online about it. So I did do that. I did look to just see what it was about, and then I jumped to YouTube to catch a trailer, which I did not do.
Yeah.
So I've been busted on trailers before, you know, over the past few years with movies that show too much in the trailer and do too much, and horror suffers from this almost worse, especially if it's a red band trailer.
Yeah. That, yeah.
So I wanted to go into this movie without any knowledge. So all I knew about it was who was in the movie and what it was about. That's it. That's all I knew.
I mean, honestly, the title is very similar to 12 Years of a Slave. Like, hey.
Yeah.
Right, it's right on. It's right there.
but man, there's just some really good shit here. I was really, really excited. You know, one of the things that you don't recognize until kind of the film is over is the town in which everything plays out lends itself really well to being almost a character in the film. Like, the setting is perfect for this.
Yes. Absolutely.
You know, I feel like some of these indie films...
especially when you consider the character... Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, especially when you consider the character motivations of the antagonist...
Right.
The town is perfect.
Yep.
Because it really puts him in a box that he can't get out of.
Yep. I love that aspect of it. You know, there's a whole, man, you know, there's so much I want to get into, but this is such a great film. I can't steal this one from y'all.
Yeah, it is. It's hard to talk about it without spoiling. And it's just, I mean, you would ask me things that caught me off guard. I mean, there's scenes in the movie that the very first time when you realize who the villain is a great scene.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm being ambiguous on purpose. It's just a great setup.
Yeah.
Because it lays something up, and then it's just
the last thing you expect.
Yes. And it's.
Yeah. No. That. And let's just say the casting here is outstanding.
Yeah.
Like, they have a couple of, I guess I'd say, teenage actors in this film.
Yep.
That, you know, typically I don't like child actors. I feel like they're not really good at their job. And that's, you know, just because acting is an emotional endeavor and they just don't have the emotional depth from experience to, you know, swim in those waters, you know, to use the same analogy. But
which is why this and Stranger Things touches notes, because those kids touch emotional points that just most people aren't able to really do. And to do it at, you know, 11 years old for Stranger Things and, you know, 18, 19 for the kids here, really, really special.
And let me just say that that was totally acting in Stranger Things. So I caught those kids on an interview in Chelsea's Netflix series.
Yep.
You know, Chelsea lately's got her new show, and the kids are not anywhere near as interesting. They're very annoying in person. So that was all acting.
You're right. That's fucking funny. Well, they're all friends now. They're all like real life friends now. Like they didn't know each other going in.
Well, of course they are.
And they became friends as they, you know, started acting. Now they do everything together. They do all their interviews together. They've been on fucking Fallon together, playing games. You know, Millie Bobby Brown and her ambiguous ass accent. You know, but I love those kids, man. They're regular kids. Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing that I love about them. They're just regular.
Well, they definitely are. I was only saying that to emphasize the fact that they are actors.
Absolutely.
You know, sometimes you get a character, you get a guy like Tom Cruise who plays basically the same character in every movie.
Correct.
And it's like, is he a good actor or is this just somebody we like watching exhibit the world? But these kids are acting. Like, cause they are not their characters.
I always give Tom Cruise a pass because he does his own stunts, though. So.
I mean, that Cruise run, you get that Cruise run, that's some acting for your ass.
I mean, he hung outside of a plane, climbed a building.
Yeah, which one was that where he traversed the building?
Hey,
Ghost Protocol.
Ghost Protocol? Okay.
That was good.
Yeah, look, you're not going to find a bigger Cruise fan than me. Well, maybe Russell.
Oh, but... yeah, I was about to say. He number one. He's sitting on top of that list.
Maybe Russell. But other than that, like, I'm all for Tom Cruise. I'm just saying, I don't think he's a particularly good actor. I think it's just somebody who has a personality that we enjoy watching on screen.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
I think those are the roles he takes now. I think in the early to mid part of his career, he did take some stronger roles that were a little bit more of a stretch for him. Obviously, roles like
Color of Money.
I agree, but they didn't really play out that well.
Yeah, you know what was the drama with he and Nicole Kidman?
Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah, Eyes Wide Shut, the Kubrick film. That shit was crazy.
That was terrible. But it was terrible. It was a horrible film.
What about Vanilla Sky?
Blame that on Roland Blasky.
What about Vanilla Sky?
I love Vanilla Sky.
See, I did too. I actually kind of enjoyed that movie.
All right. So, you know.
And it got panned a lot, but I don't get why. Yeah. It was good.
Possibly because Cameron Diaz said, like, one of the nastiest lines of life. That shit was fucked up.
Oh, yeah.
When she's in the car and they're like about to crash, she's like, I tasted your cum. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Slow up. Slow up, man.
Possibly. And you know what? Like, I saw her, and I'll never forget this. I saw her on an interview on Oprah, actually, with Tom Cruise about that movie. Mm-hmm. She kind of smack talked Tom Cruise a little bit during that interview, and I was like, I don't think that's a really good idea. But she did a couple more movies with him, so I guess they didn't take it too bad.
Yeah, but I mean, she's, you know, a lot of people tell you she'd be smelling herself, so we're gonna leave her alone.
Yeah, I think she gets high on supply. I imagine.
She ain't been Latin in a long time, so I'm not really tripping off her.
No.
Diaz, my ass. But, yeah, to bring it back to I Am Not a Serial Killer. I don't even know how we got where we are.
Yeah, can I just say, this is classic out the room. Tangents.
Yeah, seriously.
Tangents.
Seriously. But...
Oh, wait a minute, though. Before we get back to I Am Not a Serial Killer, we missed an important part of the show. What's in your cup?
Oh, I just had some ice cream.
All I have is water.
I don't even know.
All right, hold on. Let me go get an Oktoberfest. I'm going to get a fest.
Oh.
Yeah, I got some...
Something. I
got some fest pondek. I got some Fesp on deck. You know, I ain't really been drinking in a while like that. I had a stomach virus. Stomach virus. You know, that you don't really drink after you have a stomach virus like the one I had, man. That shit was...
You gotta drink that vinegar. Do you have some vinegar?
Look, vinegar wouldn't have stayed in. Like,
you gotta take a shot of vinegar.
This was the worst.
A shot of vinegar?
Yeah, I've never heard that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what my country-ass dad used to do. He had a stomach problem. He'd take a shot of vinegar. Like, just regular distilled vinegar. That'll clear you out. I can tell you from experience. You're going to hit the bathroom in about 10 minutes. But you're going to feel right after that.
I've never
heard that. Oh, yeah, it'll clear you right on out.
Yeah, I've never heard of that either.
Oh, yeah, try it. Next time you got sour stomach, take you a shot of vinegar.
Keep in mind, like, I was, like, both ends. So, like, everything was bad.
Oh, no.
That sounds like
you got food poisoning.
Yeah, I thought I had the neurovirus, so, you know.
That's stupid. So, Scott, what's this lager you drinking on? Tell me about it.
No. The lager is just water. I'm recovering from a cold myself, so I'll be drinking tomorrow if I'm completely healthy, so.
This Oktoberfest is good as shit.
And see, now, and we're getting into that prime beer season where Oktoberfest and pumpkin beers are coming up.
So I don't like pumpkin beers, I've recognized.
Oh, really? Okay, so I would tell you, do you like pumpkin pie?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Have you ever had a pumpkin beer called Pum King?
No, I have not, because I realize I do not like pumpkin beer.
Wait, hold on. Bear with me for a minute. It's Southern Tier. It's called Pumpkin. It tastes like pumpkin pie.
Mm.
It's very good, and it's very alcoholic.
That sounds like a goddamn problem.
That's why. It's a good problem to have, though.
Like, you know, the problem is white folks love this time of year when the seasons start changing and shit. Because y'all like to do bonfires and, you know, sit outside and have the smell of burning wood.
Okay, you know. I'm not going to disagree with you.
Yeah, I ain't said nothing wrong. You know, look, white folks have taken pumpkin spice lattes so far to the next level, that should have just called PSL now.
Yeah, look, I like the fall. I'm not a woman.
Hey, you ain't got to be no woman. If you have some Ugg boots, bro, we might have a problem.
Oh, boy.
You ain't got no Uggs, do you, Scott?
No, I don't.
All right. We good, then, dog. We good.
I'm walking with my Uggs, my pumpkin spice latte, my pinky finger up, and I'm going to a bonfire tonight.
Fam, if I see you and you have any of that shit on, I'm smacking you on sight.
We're going to pull you to the side and be like, yo, Scott, we got to talk, homie.
Like I just said that I am not snatching wigs. I will snatch your wigs and show you receipts. Motherfucker, I was there before you got married. How dare you do this?
Uh-huh.
At that point, it's an insult to both me and Damon. It's personal at that point.
Right. Like, you did this on purpose.
Uh-huh.
He said, uh-huh. Yeah, I did.
Uh-huh.
All right, for I am not a serial killer, what are your slashes?
You know, I've been thinking about this since I first watched this. So we gushed over it. We didn't say any dislikes. I do have a dislike about it.
Okay.
You know, whenever I have a movie like this, I always think, because initially I watched this and I didn't really have any complaints about it. But I also wouldn't call it my favorite horror movie I've seen this year. So that means that there's something there that I didn't like, and I'm trying to pinpoint it. So I still think my favorite one this year is Green Room.
Okay.
Which I think I gave an 8.5 or a 9 to.
I think you gave it an 8.5.
I'm gonna go with the 7.5.
Mmm. Okay.
Okay. I enjoyed it. I would recommend it. I told Damon this the other day. Another movie that this reminded me of was Under the Skin with Scarlett Johansson.
Yes.
It's very, very There's similar some reminiscent to that. Aspects there. And it's similar to see the other movies. I want to say it's similar to. I don't want to say it's similar to because that might be spoilerish. I guess.
Yeah, I got you. Yep.
Like, no. You can do that. You can do that. No, I'll do that because people want to hear that.
I mean, did
there so, was some comparisons.
Well, when you described it, did you use the word supernatural?
He did. I wouldn't have done that.
Okay. I did. Yes.
Okay.
So, I wouldn't have used that word.
Okay. Well, you wouldn't have used that word because
well, of realistically, we don't really know what it is because yeah. It could be anything.
Yeah, I just wouldn't use that word. So.
So. The movies, I wrote Damon this after I watched it, and I said the movies it reminded me of were Under the Skin is what I think it's most similar to. It also reminded me
that.
It also reminded me of The Thing, and it reminded me of Deborah Logan, and this is why I'm giving it a lower score than Green Room. Deborah Logan, I like.
Deborah Logan's a good pick.
It is a good flick, but it's slow. And this movie is a little slow, and you guys know I'm not as big on the slow build as you guys are.
Yeah, I love a slow burn. If the payoff is there, I'm always in for a slow burn.
And I love that as well. However, I think that's why I didn't immediately fall in love with this. And maybe I'm nitpicking, just because I guess I didn't enjoy it as much as other ones I've seen this year. But I did really like this movie. And
you have this on par with Purge.
Did I get that? Sounds about right. I would say that. Did I give Purge a 7.5?
I think I didn't give it an 8.
Last year.
Huh. Yeah.
I think you gave it an 8, actually. Yeah.
Huh, I don't remember. So I feel all right with a 7.5 though.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Tom, what'd you give it?
I gotta agree with Scott.
7.5.
I won't say that the film was no. In that, I don't think that the film was slow, but I think that I think there were parts that dragged a little bit, so maybe a little slow.
The film but only had a runtime of like 89 minutes, though.
104.
Yeah, but it was.
Is 104?
You know, here's the thing.
That's longer than I thought it was. Okay, all right.
104 and it's
yeah, no. Here's the thing. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to give the other stat here. So it's 104 minutes, and it was a $1.45 million budget.
Oh, I mean, it'll be lucky if it makes that back, though.
It'll be 1.4? Really? I think it's going to make that easily.
Well, it got released. It was limited and VOD.
Right. Anytime you see a film that's VOD, that should usually top side of like 740K.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, you got a good point. You got a good point. That's too bad because it really was very good. Well, I will say that it was a little bit slow. I have to agree on that. Just in certain parts. Maybe what I should say is it was uneven. A little bit uneven. And so I'm going to knock it down a little bit for that. But other than that, I absolutely adored this film. So I'm going to give it a 9.5.
Oh!
Whoa!
Yeah, I'm not playing. Well,
dude, that's an all-time score right there.
Yeah, that's classic. That's a tone classic. Okay.
Yeah. I think the tone classic. Look back on well.
Yeah.
And anytime you get me to root for the bad guy, and you know I love to root for the bad guy, but you got to be a bad enough guy for me to deserve it. I rooted for the bad guy on this one, so yeah, they got me.
Wow.
Yeah, holy shit, I'm blown away by that. And the thing is, I was going to surprise y'all and give it an 8.5 and maybe swing to 8.75. But that shit seems damn near measly at this point.
I'm back.
Hey. I'm happy. That's.
I remember the days when I was giving movies higher ratings than everybody else.
Yep. Yep. So, Yeah, I'm still going to stay with my 8.75.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, it's a good flick. I was very pleasantly surprised.
I mean, especially going in not really knowing shit.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for real.
I mean, this is a movie I would recommend people watch. It's a movie I think that even budding horror fans would enjoy.
Absolutely.
I mean, hell, you could suck people in with, Christopher Lloyd.
I mean, Christopher Lloyd is a fucking national treasure. Your man is intensely good here.
Bruh.
Absolutely.
Like,
intensely
following
good.
Following in a long tradition of actors who started out in comedic roles, transferring into more dramatic roles, and remarkable results. Like, I didn't
movies
know
like that.
In him.
Movies like that got nominated. He might snag a nomination from the big award shows
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. If horror was seen on par with other forms of movies, this could possibly get it.
Yes,
absolutely.
But since they are not,
I put this on par with Albert Brooks' performance in Drive. Like, ooh. This was something I did not know he had in the wheelhouse.
That's a good comparison.
I think that's a really good comparison.
Yeah.
You know, I think Albert Brooks, you know, he was fighting against his basically every former role he had ever had at that point.
Absolutely.
So, to get to the point where you actually took him seriously, and you're like, oh, this motherfucker's really acting. He's really going in. You know, but I look at somebody like Christopher Lloyd, who, you know, was a serious actor who made his mark as an iconic funny man. But he was a serious actor and has never truly been able to get away from it until now.
Yeah.
And this could just be, this could just be me being ignorant of his past roles, though.
Well, we associate him with you know, Doc.
He's Doc Brown. He's Doc Brown forever. I mean,
right.
He's always going to be Doc Brown.
I mean, when I think of him, I think of Doc Brown. And I also think of the homeless thief in Dennis the Menace. I grew up watching that movie. So.
Yeah, I definitely did not think that at all.
You also got to look at, you know, guys like Jack Palance. Okay. Leslie Nielsen, especially Leslie Nielsen, who was a straight man his whole career. Then he gets hooked up in these Naked Gun films, and all of a sudden we find out, wow, this guy's really funny. Like,
well, he did that.
Really
he did that
actor,
first.
Do
in, he did that first in Airplane.
Yeah, but before, previous to that, Leslie Nielsen was a straight man, and all his. I mean, this is, you know, old stuff. We're talking about 50s and 60s, but previous to that, he had been a straight man in all his stuff.
Yeah.
You know, he was the hero. You know, he had the voice and the straight chin and all that other jazz. So he was the hero. And he played those pretty good, too. But, you know, we had no idea he was funny until they cast him in something funny. And so I think this, again, you know, comparing with, you know, Albert Brooks, this is another example of that with, you know, characters who just have deep pockets. You know, guys who can really, you know, do it.
Yeah,
so I was super impressed.
It's funny because, you know, Leslie Nielsen was in the Poseidon Adventure, you know, Creepshow.
Oh, yeah.
But, exactly. You know, after he started doing some of these, you know, these straight movies, that's what he was doing. I mean, he paid the bills off those. But, you know, that's good. You know, somebody like Gene Wilder. Gene Wilder was a really talented actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super talented actor.
Yeah.
But motherfuckers, you know, especially if Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, if that's your introduction to him, which for a lot of people it was, other than Young Frankenstein, you know, you're just never sure what you're watching. You know, screaming. Like, when he's yelling at the kid, you know, when he's talking about the fizzy lifting drinks, and, like, he's going back and forth between this kind of maniacal crazy man and this dude who only wants to help kids and, you're not really sure which one he is. In actuality, he's all of those things. Like, that's an incredible performance for him.
You know, the first Gene Wilder movie I ever saw was See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
Hey, there are worse introductions, brother.
Absolutely. That's a great
film. That wasn't a bad one.
No.
Yeah.
Nah, that was part of that trilogy with him and Richard Pryor that were all legitimately good flicks. And honestly, See No Evil, Hear No Evil is probably the worst of the three. So that's saying something, you know?
Silver Streak,
Stir Crazy.
Stir Crazy is probably the best. Very good flicks. Stir Crazy is probably the best.
Definitely the best.
Silver Streak 2 and then See No Evil, Hear No Evil. Yeah, I give you that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, Stir Crazy, just for y'all out there listening, it ain't horror, but if you ain't seen Stir Crazy, you need to up your quotient here. Go on and see that. It's good stuff.
He and Richard did a fourth movie, too, called Another You, but nobody was checking for it at that point.
Sure, I don't think I saw that one. Shoot.
I think my mother saw it.
Oh, shit. Sidney Poitier directed that?
Poitier. Yeah, man.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh. Don't even get me started on the 48 Cosby films. Those were great. It's too bad Cosby turned out to be an asshole, but...
Yeah.
Those flicks were good.
Yeah. A dick bag of pills and raping, so... We're not going to talk about it.
Yeah, it's hard to even reminisce at this point.
Right. If it's not in the kind of framework of the Huxtables, I can't really fuck with it. Or when Bill did, Martin's Funeral, which is he did kind of a jazz thing. It's a really, really good song. Tribe uses it on Midnight Marauders. I would tell you. I used to put it as the outro of this show a lot.
I know what you're talking about.
But yeah, man, I am not a serial killer. Go see it any way you can.
Because you know how I saw it. I got it on Amazon Prime, actually.
Did you really?
I did.
Excellent job, man.
Did you really?
Dude, I like supporting the indie stuff, dude. You know that. I got it on there. It was, I think, to rent for 48 hours. It was $6.99.
Good shit.
I didn't even know it was on Amazon Prime. Ooh.
Yeah,
I was pleasantly surprised. I was just I searched for it, and put it on there, and yeah.
The
VOD.
The little kid, or I shouldn't say kid. The main character's name is Max Records, and this shit is
where the wild things are.
Yeah. He 80% on Rotten Tomatoes. Good film, man.
Yeah. Good film.
Now keep in mind though, I think this has to be stated. It's not for everybody. This is definitely not a film that's for everybody. But for the people that it is for, you're going to love it.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. There are some parts of this movie that could be tough to take. For sure.
Yeah, if you're not into horror... Or a willing to suspend some disbelief, you're not really going to fuck with this.
Absolutely, yes. Suspension of disbelief, yeah.
So, all right. We're going to keep it rolling right on along into what is... has been incredibly surprising in terms of output and what it's made. Fede Alvarez's Don't Breathe. This film actually might be the number one, producing horror of the year, I believe. I think it's made the most money.
Really? Well, it is the number one movie the last time I checked.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Hold on a minute. So I have not seen this, but I'm going to give some stats here.
Yeah.
All right. So we got 88 minutes.
Yep.
Budget. $9.9 million was the budget it is currently sitting at. $90
million. Hmm.
Ooh. And I have read an article where they're already considering a sequel.
They should not. There's no way they should.
They shouldn't.
They set the sequel up. They should not open for one. Yeah.
They left it open for one, but I don't see how you make it happen. I just don't.
Sam Raimi's name is on the producer's list.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same team that did the Evil Dead remake.
Well, I mean, that's not necessary.
And can we just say that they brought back my boo,
Jane Levy? Yeah, Jane, you know, so here's the thing. I'm going to set this up. And I'm
all right, now here, let me do this first. So, are you guys? Is this a movie to spoil?
We kind of on that borderline.
Yeah, I'm good, right in the middle.
But I don't feel like it's going to be spoiled.
Yeah,
we'll spoil a little bit.
Yeah. Like I won't give you the twist, but I'm gonna set it up for you. Like I'm gonna give you more than I gave away for
Iron Man
Serial Killer.
Yes.
So Jane Levy is part of a group of thieves in Detroit who basically break into people's houses, take their shit, and leave. They always keep the amount of shit that they steal under 10 G's, so it's not grand larceny. One of the dudes that is in their crew, his pops works for, I guess, like the most popular security system company around. So whenever they identify a crib, he goes and gets the keys. And they just, you know, get in. Get in, get out. Nobody gets hurt. And you know, so let's start there. The crew are bad people. They are not good people. Okay?
No.
They will do anything they can to make you believe that these are supposed to be in some way sympathetic people. They are not good people. They steal from everyone. Regular people, they steal from people in Detroit who don't have shit. They're still stealing from them. These are not good people. The fact that they gave Jane Levy a cool name as Rocky, she's not a good person in this film. They will try whatever they can. They try, all right, so at one point in this film, after you've already seen them break into a crib, they will show you that Jane Levy is trying to make enough money to move to California with her little sister, and that her mother's boyfriend is such a scumbag. How do you know he's a scumbag? Because he has a swastika tattooed on his chest. He's not just a bad guy. He's a double bad guy. So now you're supposed to be sympathetic to this person who's breaking into other people's homes, and that's what you're supposed to be like, oh, it's okay, as long as you're going to move your little sister to California. Fuck that. You're breaking into people's houses and stealing their shit. So that pissed me off about the film. Like, after I kind of took a step away from it, that was what I was left with. Tony, you want to talk about it a little bit?
Well, I'm a little biased because, you know, that's my future baby mama. Mm-hmm. So I am completely sympathetic to her in all ways, always and forever. That being said, one of the things that I really liked about it is, you know, piggybacking on your point about, yes, these are bad people. And they sort of kind of try to make them a little more sympathetic, but you can't really do too much with these type of people. But they make the antagonist so bad that it overwhelms these other bad people. And so to that degree, I kind of appreciate what they did there. Because, you know, they end up biting off way more than they can chew.
For sure.
And another classic case of when keeping it real goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they jumped in the deep end and did not know what they were getting into.
Yeah, there were sharks in the fish. They had no clue.
Oh, yeah. I appreciated the raising of stakes here. It was unexpected for me because I didn't go into this movie. I mean, I knew the premise, but I didn't know, you know, the characterizations and whatnot. Like, I didn't know how far they were going to take it, and they took it far. They ran with that bitch. They ran it all the way down to the they ran this one back to back, 100-yard receiver. Like, it was done. So, I was impressed with that, because you don't often see movies take that risk and say, okay, we're going to show you a bunch of scumbags, and then we're going to show you this one dude who's so bad that it's going to scare you and them. Like, that's good. You know, there's no good guys in this movie. There's bad guys and there's worse guys.
Right. Right. You know, and then on top of all that, I feel like there's still the idea that you're still supposed to be rooting for these motherfuckers. But you got the blind samurai and his bionic goddamn dog.
You know, I knew you was going to say something about that.
This motherfucker jumped up like 18 pieces of furniture to go into a fucking ventilation system inside of a 1945 hub. Like, come on, man. Come on.
Hey, look, you know, I've raised pit bulls before, and I can tell you, them mofos can climb fences and trees just like cats can. Like, some dogs, they got it.
Yeah, I know.
Some dogs can do it.
They had to, they actually employed three dogs to make that one dog for the film.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. You can't expect all that from one dog.
Right.
Especially with those kind of filming schedules. Come on now.
And
Homeboy needs a break every now and then.
Yeah, the amount of flashing and sounds. All in all, you know, I didn't dislike the film. But there was definitely some fuckeration, and I was not always with it.
There was definitely some fuckeration in this movie. We can't play around with that.
Yeah. Yeah, there are times where I was like...
I will say, though, that the twists... Again, this is another example of twists that I didn't see coming.
Yeah.
Not to the point of... not to the point of some of the other films we talked about. But this one, you know, it's good, you know, especially someone like me who see, you know, someone like us who sees a lot of these films. And, you know, some of us write and do other things. So we kind of know the way story arcs bend. So we're expecting a movie to go a certain way. And often we're right.
Yeah.
But this one went in a way that I did not see coming.
Yeah.
And so I appreciated it.
It definitely went left.
Yes, yes.
Stylistically.
So it surprised me. It's supposed to be scaring me, you know?
Yeah, you know, stylistically, there are aspects in this film that are really fucking good. So there's probably a 7 to 8 minute scene where there are no lights. And the way they shoot it, really well done.
Absolutely.
So shout out to Fetty for that one. I thought that was excellent. Anything else you want to talk about on the show?
On this flick right here?
Yeah. Like your boy Dylan Minnette, who basically was just used by Rocky to get into the cribs and fucking Money. Who deserved everything he got.
Yeah, I got no love for Money, first of all. Like, I'm good. I'm okay that he peaced out the way he did. I'm good on that. But I'm seeing a running theme of, like, friend zone dude level number 9,000 in movies lately.
Yeah.
And I'm a little uncomfortable with it at this point.
You're just like, the good guy
I kind of want guys to... No. I kind of want men to be, like, making their own, like, righteous decisions at this point.
Opposed to the motivation always being this, like, undying love, this unrequited kind of love by, you know, somebody who gets you into something that you know better than to do, and yet you still do it.
And, which we also saw in It Follows.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
Same thing, same character.
I agree. You know, and that was Gilchrist in that.
If it was Jane Levy, I can't say I wouldn't do the same thing. Just gotta be honest. Like, she's so cute. I just want to put her in my back pocket and take her on a bus ride or some shit. Like, I want to take her to brunch.
That shit sounded really, really fucking bad. He's like, I want to put her on a bus with no windows.
And you know what I mean, wow. Devin.
Got on that Cosby wow. Fast in the motherfucker, boy.
I want to put her on those, those baby Bjorns and just walk around with her on my stomach.
Wow.
You are stupid.
So I actually think that one was worse than the one before, so I'm just stop.
Might be. So what are you going to give Don't Breathe?
Well, honestly, okay, so I would start off with saying this is pretty much an average horror / thriller flick. But, you know, I love the blind badass. You know, I'm into the Zatoichis of the world. Shout out to Carl.
Yeah.
So that gives it a bump up.
His Zatoichi just turned 6.
I know, right? So that gives it a shot up. It's got Jane Levy in it, so that gives it a shot up. immediately. Like, off on site. But, you know... you know, the friend zone dude, the plot's a little unbelievable, you know?
Yeah.
Like, especially that one turn that they take with the, I don't want to go too far, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
That plot, that turn they take with the girl.
Yep.
And that was a little, you know, that one turned my stomach a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, that whole thing. Like, his whole story.
Yeah. So, you know, I give it like a 7, 7.5. No, I'm leaning more towards 7. I'll give it a 7.
That shit's firmly in 6.
Catch this joint on matinee. Yeah, catch this joint on matinee. Like,
yeah. I think so. I think it's matinee. It's joint firmly in 6.5 for me. It's cool. It's cool, you know. I don't.
Yeah, definitely, it's cool.
I don't dislike it, but they're definitely.
They can change your life.
No, it's definitely not going to change your life. And when you take a step back from it, it's not as pretty.
No, that's the thing. Like, there's some movies that sit with you and make you like question some stuff. Like, I Am Not a Serial Killer really made me like ask some real questions, like
mental health issues. Bad guy
and the less bad guy, because let's be honest, the protagonist isn't exactly a hero. It really made me think about some things, like, you know, a lion is a villain to a lamb.
A lion but is a villain to a gazelle.
Yeah, but we as human beings take a step back and we're like, well, the lion's just being a lion.
Right.
He's doing what he's supposed to do. He can't do anything else. Do we vilify him for that? No, that's just nature.
Yep.
That's what I Am a Serial Killer gets into, the ambiguities of our roles in the natural order, which I thought they did really, really, really well. This movie doesn't make you inspire any kind of thought at all like that.
Yeah.
But it is definitely entertaining, and you will enjoy your bucket of popcorn and your soda while you watch this flick.
Yeah.
And again, it's Jane Levy. I mean, come on, she's cute as a button.
Yep.
Good God.
So, you know, you can't be mad.
Scott, okay, so do you feel better about this film listening to this now, Scott?
It kind of sounds like exactly what I would have expected.
A bag of dicks. No, I mean...
yikes.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
I don't know. This time of the year is kind of an interesting... It's kind of an interesting time, you know. Yeah, we get a lot more horror, but I guess I've kind of found myself enjoying movies more like I like the indie ones more because, A, I think they're a little more creative.
Definitely.
Even if they're not, lower budget movies can be really creative and be made horribly, but I can still enjoy them for what they are. And. Yeah. I found myself kind of gravitating more towards being interested by something that I can only get on, maybe still on DVD or only watch on VOD and not go to the theaters. I'm less interested in, you know, Don't Breathe or Lights Out, and even this new Blair Witch that's coming up, even though I do think that actually that is kind of intriguing to me. I don't know. When I saw Don't Breathe, I thought the trailer actually was really intriguing. But the more I kind of got closer and closer to seeing it, the less interested I became. You know what I mean? It just reminded me of a movie that I could catch on cable, or a movie that, you know, and I'm not saying I probably will go see it. I want to see it, but I'm not rushing out to go see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're never going to make it.
Yeah, real talk, without Jane and the antagonist,
Stephen Lang,
without those two characters, yeah, this could have absolutely been done on VOD.
Yep.
You know, we're talking about like almost, you know, we're basically talking about like a bottle movie. You know, most of it takes place in one set.
Right.
The other two, there's about five actors that of any consequence. And only two of them are any name that you would recognize ever. You know, You do this with, you know, you swap out those two characters for different actors of similar ability, and this is a VOD movie. So you're not wrong. But again, You know, you're not going to ever catch me saying any ill will of my baby mom. Like, never.
So funny. All right. I think I gave it a 6.5. And I do not know if I'll be watching if I see it on cable. I don't know.
I won't catch it again. It's not a rewatch.
Yeah. That fucking bionic dog. So, that's Don't Breathe.
<It's> still
next up. Hey, Scott, if you want to bounce, man, I know you got early day tomorrow.
Yeah, I think I will, actually. You guys, take it easy. Don't Breathe is on my maybe list.
Yeah. Ton and I are going to finish up this last couple topics and we will get out of here, but I appreciate you.
All right.
All right, man.
Peace.
So, yeah, the next thing we're going to talk about is the return of American Horror Story.
Did we talk about Lights Out yet?
Nah, I'm gonna get to that.
Okay.
American Horror Story worked really hard to lose a lot of its fan base the past two seasons, with Freak Show and the Lady Gaga vehicle hotel. You know, there were times where I don't know if it even intended to be scary. There were aspects of Freak Show that were very scary, but at the end just was very sad. You know, the 1922 film Freaks, it was a huge, huge kind of, you know, influence for the entire way that was set up. You could see it through the way it was shot, the people that they kind of created, and the way it played out. I got it. Here's the issue. After the runtime of that one movie, you still got another 11 episodes to come up with. And shit just did not play out well. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was a problem. And I have to be honest with you, I was not looking forward to this season because, you know, the hotel aspect of American Horror Story, in my opinion, was, you know, visually appealing.
Yes.
But as far as plot goes, was nothing. It was terrible.
Yeah.
It was just basically Lady Gaga's acting debut. And that's all the whole series was about. And that's fine if you're like a super huge fan of Lady Gaga, but other than that, it was terrible. Freak Show started off pretty good and then fell apart like a pair of thrift store drawers. The only thing that kept together was Dandy, who was amazing.
Yeah, I think it's Finn Watchrock.
Yeah, so the last two seasons have been crap, which I predicted because I know he moved on to Scream Queens, and this is a pattern with Ryan Murphy.
Yeah.
He gets a project, he gets it going good. He gets another project, and then the previous project just falls apart. So I expected this to be terrible. But I gotta be honest, man. This opening season, this opening episode.
Season 6.
Yeah, season episode 1, season 6. That is where it's at. And honestly, like, it honestly felt like a movie. Like, you hear people say this, but it felt like a movie to me. Like, I was completely, they had me. I was completely in.
Yeah, my Roanoke Nightmare, I believe it's called. Yes. That shit is absolutely incredible. True crime, real horror event style in which the season is presented. Man, this is some.
It excellent. Really works.
Yep.
Yeah, no, that was a genius conceit on their part. Like, this really works. And they even nail the details. Like, they even nail the point that, like, the reenactment actors are far better looking than the actual people who are doing it, you know, who went through the drama.
Yeah, I mean, outside of Lily Rabe and Sarah Paulson, I agree.
Yeah, no, they looked almost identical. Like, I really thought that was the same actress.
So silly. So
silly. I'm not playing. I really did.
Yeah.
But they just changed her hair or something.
Right.
They did a good job there. But Tara's mama to Angela Bassett, that's really kind of an insult to Angela Bassett.
That shit.
Like, I'm a little hurt.
Yo,
I'm a little hurt.
Her come up was so crucial.
Yeah, bruh. Come on.
Like, her come up, that's like somebody finding Michael B. Jordan to play me in a movie about me.
You were stupid.
You know what I mean? If they find that swole, sexy Bama to be me right now, yeah, I'm feeling real good about myself.
Yeah, no, you're not going to be mad. You're not going to be mad at all.
Right, or Idris.
So, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, Idris, well, should play me.
And similarly for the male lead, you know, yeah, I don't even know who the other name brand target Negro was, Cooper Good Jr., like, that's not even close.
He was in The Leftovers. He was the black dad in the last season of Leftovers.
Oh, okay. All right, you're right.
Not everyone's going to see that. But you know,
yeah, but still, like, if we're just talking off of, like, aesthetic appearance.
Correct.
Come on.
Yep.
They don't look nothing alike. Like, nothing. They don't look alike. They don't sound alike. Yep. Like, this is one of those things that, I mean, not to get too political, but, you know, cross-racial identification is an issue. You know, it's scientifically proven. Clearly, Ryan Murphy does not know that just because they're both Negroes of a similar shade, they don't look alike. Because they did look nothing alike.
Nothing.
Neither did Angela Bassett's character and the character who played her character.
But surprisingly, though, you know, having all that said, Angela Bassett affected some of this lady's mannerisms. And I watched it and I was like, holy shit, Angela Bassett is doing work right now. And I think a lot of people are going to miss the nuance behind it. But she is doing work.
Well, I think that's more a credit to Angela than a credit to Ryan.
Sure.
Or the director.
Woman
is a for real actress.
You will never get any argument from me on that.
Yeah, I'm just happy she's cashing checks. Because I know she's making money off of these joints. And she deserves it because she's a great actress.
Gotcha.
So I'm just glad she's cashing checks. And I'm mad at Courtney B. Vance. Because he is the most average-looking Negro in the world. And if he can get an Angela, where's mine at? Like, I'm just mad.
Yo, I mean, if you saw your man in Johnny Cochran, or as Johnny Cochran, you know why. So, let's be realistic. Courtney B. Vance is one of the greatest actors alive. That motherfucker good. So, guess what? He get a pass from me.
I'm still hating. Hate. Hey.
Yeah, I bet you are.
You know I am.
All that hate. So, yeah. This season...
Where do you think this is going?
Huh?
Where do you think this is going?
I don't know because I feel like they're not going to do
start off good and go bad. So yeah, like,
but this is setting up to be really good. Like, there, you know, there was a talk that this season would be, you know, like kind of a Holocaust. There was talk that this would be more X-Filesy with an alien abduction, and you know, when you get there, it's none of those things. It's an interracial couple, and it's just good. So I wanted to continue this way. I hope that it does. I don't know if a track record gives us enough to believe that it'll stay this good. You know what I mean? So.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know, man. You know, I love the cast. I love the fact that they have kept all these folks together, and as a group, as a collective of actors, they have each other's rhythm down, and you know, it allows them to take chances and probably be very comfortable taking a chance in front of an actor and being vulnerable in a way that you probably wouldn't if you were brand new to the group. So, you know, I love what they've done here. We'll see.
Agreed.
Keep it
agreed.
Up.
I love it. I'm not confident that they're going to keep it up, I have to be honest.
Yeah.
But if they continue in this vein, I think I'm going to be thrilled, and I think everybody else will as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think that they've earned enough trust over the last couple seasons to be able to be like, you know what, they can pull this off still.
Exactly. Yes, that's my exact sentiment, yes. But so far, if y'all haven't caught the first episode, go ahead and watch that. Because in and of itself, it's satisfying.
Yeah.
If you don't see nothing else after that, you'll be fine.
Yeah, like, go ahead, watch that, then go watch all of Atlanta. You good.
Atlanta's good. I was going to bring that up, but yes, Atlanta is good.
I've been a Donald Glover fan for a long time. I thought that dude is incredibly talented. You know, I felt a lot of his criticism has been unwarranted. So I really like to support that dude. And this particular thing that he's done with Atlanta, it's so good and so authentic. And
yes, and very, yeah, yes, very authentic.
You know, it actually sounds and feels like Black Atlanta. It feels like the Black South. It feels like, you know, it's just good. So, yeah. FX, man, yo, whoever is their creative director, that motherfucker needs a raise. Because they're doing incredible shit. And they're allowing, you know, artists to make shows in ways that are so completely different from one another, but so damn avant-garde. You know, the Pamela Adlon show just came out, too. I think it's Happier Things. Yes. I forget what it's called.
Better Things.
Better Things.
Better Things.
Yep. That's out. You're the Worst is up again and still good. So.
Yeah, FX made a really good call by saying, okay, we're going to hire talented people. We're going to give you a check.
Yep.
And you make whatever show you want to make with this check.
Yep.
That bet has paid off. I mean, they started it with Louis. Now they're doing Better Things. I'm pretty sure they gave my boy Donald Glover or Childish Gambino or however you want to call him the same deal.
Yep.
And it's paying off. Like, they're doing a really good job, which is funny because, you know, previous to this, the whole entertainment industry has been about control and micromanaging.
Yep.
And finally, they're getting to the point where they're like, okay, we're just going to hire, you know, we're going to hire people who are talented creatives, and we're going to let them go. We're not going to give them a lot of money, but we're going to let them go.
Yeah, or we'll offer them less money so they can have creative control.
Exactly. And it's a good bet. It's a really good bet. And so, you know, I think Atlanta, Better Things, especially Better Things, because Louis is a co-executive producer on that.
Yeah.
But a lot of this show, you know, You're the Worst, you know, some stuff that's coming down the pipeline now owe a lot to FX and Louis for this new dynamic that they've set up.
I agree. Yeah, there is a really, really good kind of feel that comes along with watching a really talented person tell the story that they want to tell.
Yep. And it all runs down to, you know, those of us in the writing industry, we have a saying, it's the personal is universal. And all that is to say that, like, don't feel like telling your story the way you want to tell it won't resonate with someone else, because it might not be their story, but something in that, you know, the authenticity is going to vibe with them. And see that in Better Things. I mean, we have a struggling actress who has a, you know, voice acting career that's keeping her afloat, which is Pamela Adlon. Again, she is the voice of Bobby and what's that, King of the Hill? Yeah, King of the Hill. She's the voice of Bobby in King of the Hill. She's done a lot of other voiceover work. So, like, this is her story, and she's telling it, and it's good, you know? And we wouldn't have this unless she was a contributor of Louis, who got the first deal.
Yep.
We wouldn't have had Louis unless FX had made this deal.
Yep.
You know, they made this calculation that this was going to work. So, you know, I'm happy that this is going on right now in the industry. I think this could lead to a lot of good things.
I think it can only lead to good things, you know, because there are so many talented people who are looking for an opportunity to be authentic and tell their story, who have resisted the traditional Hollywood model for so long, but there's never been a vehicle for them. You know, with the kind of explosion of YouTube celebrities, where people literally just get to tell their stories in the way they want. You look at somebody like Issa Rae, you know, Awkward Black Girl, you know, even as far back as 7 years ago, couldn't have happened.
No. And that gave birth to something, you know, now we got a show on it, what is it, MTV, loosely exactly, Nicole, who literally could be my ex-girlfriend. Like, one of my ex-girlfriends looks exactly like her, talks exactly like her, acts exactly like her. And the thing that I love about it is that it's authentically black while not being stereotypically black.
Yeah.
Like, it's a different side of black, but at the same time, still very black. Well, and black, I love it.
Black people have been fighting for so long to explain that we are not monolithic. And, you know, this is one of the few times where you're getting an opportunity to not only see it, but appreciate it in a way that feels real. You know, I think there's been so long where so much of TV, the way it was packaged for consumption, was like, hey, we're going to trim the fat, we're going to do this, and we're just going to give you the same type of meal every day. Now people are getting the opportunity to choose what kind of meal they want. And, you know, you say, hey, we want a little fat here, we want something a little weird here. You're like, wait a minute, there are black people who are awkward and weird too, and have self-doubt, and, you know, are not always super cool, and, you know, don't dance well, and, you know, tend to be smart, you know. And it's not just everybody hates Chris, which, you know, I thought was, which I figured is a brilliant, brilliant show. You know, I've been recently rewatching it with my kids. You know, my five-year-old, he, you know, I try to find shows where there are brown folks for him to watch, because, you know, you watch enough Disney shit, there's only a token black kid, or, you know, the shows are so very white centric. You know, I try to find shows where there are times where you can just see some black folks, and, you know, Everybody Hates Chris is one of those shows that I feel like it's really, really good for doing that. And, you know, he recognizes it. He likes it a lot. And I like it. I think it's a brilliant, brilliant show. You know, it shows so many different ways of blackness, all in the same time, all being authentic. You know, and you're looking at struggling mothers or struggling actors, and, you know, Better Things. And it's like, wait a minute, that happens too. Like, you know, not all struggling actors are people like Friends. They're no longer beautiful 20-somethings. They're struggling actors into their 40s. Like, if you're an actor, you're going to be an actor forever. That's what you do. You know, like when Q-Tip talks about, you know, being an artist, you know, you're not an artist so you can get paid. You do it to death. James Brown did it to death. Prince did it to death. Michael Jackson did it to death. You know what I mean? Like these people, this is the only thing they knew how to do. And actors, you know, creatives, that's the only thing they know how to do. The shit is not always sexy. It's not always pretty. But, you know, that doesn't mean you still don't have the travails of life. All that shit's there, too. So, yeah.
I completely agree. And I'm super excited. It seems like it's going to be a good TV season. I'm mm-hmm. down with it.
Yep. You know, Grimm's final season, so.
And I don't know how to feel about that. I feel like, I don't know, like, on the one hand, I feel like Grimm probably has run his course.
Yeah.
So it's okay to bow out while you're still doing good. But on the second half, like, I do want some more Grimm.
I agree.
I'm not going to front.
We know there's only 13 more episodes.
Yeah. Yeah,
so that's probably, what, 8 more Bessin? Because they got to tie everything else up from the people that we know. That, right.
If like, that.
They're probably not going to be introducing many new ones.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm disappointed that we didn't get more African folklore Vessin, but, you know, beggars can't be choosers.
That would have been nice. Yes.
Yeah, man.
That would have been nice.
Hank still.
Well, we got Elizabeth after Antonio, though. So I'll take that.
She got beheaded, cuz she gone. But yeah, I know.
I know, but while we had her, she was so badass. She was so badass. I really wish they would have got rid of Juliet's punk ass, but whatever.
You ain't never thought.
Oh God. I mean, I get how they brought her back, and it's more suited to her character or her as an actress because she's not a warm. She was. I don't know how they cast her as a love interest because there's no warmth in that woman, like none.
Nope.
But the character she's playing now fits her better.
Yeah.
And that's good, but I just don't want her around.
You know.
But I'm shocked at, I can't remember her name right now, but what do they call that? The,
Hex and Beast?
The witch. Yeah, the Hex. I was about to call her Heffenweisen, which is a beer. So.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were about to say. But, you're talking about Claire Coffey.
But the the Hex and Beast. I'm shocked.
Claire Coffey, Adeline Shade.
With the squeeze out of her, like she's very warm. Like I was like, well, they should have switched this around.
Remember a couple seasons ago when I told you I was coming around on Claire Coffey as an actress? I feel
we all shit on me.
y'all shit on me, and now you're looking at me like, wait a minute, she's a much better actor than I thought she was. And
she definitely is. I got to give that to you.
You know, she's much more expressive. She uses her face well, and you know, her kind of maybe not necessarily love, because I don't necessarily know if that's the right term, but her affection and kind of closeness with Nick, that shit rang true to me.
It really did, especially considering the complicated situation that they're in.
Correct.
You know, like to be able to pull that tension and warmth off simultaneously.
Yep.
Like that's not an easy thing to do.
Nah, man.
So, like, I'm impressed with the way they took that. And again, I'm just going to take credit because everything we told them to do, they did. After they did what we told them to do, the story progressed naturally.
Yep.
It made sense.
Yeah,
you know, y'all ain't got to pay us for that one, but just call us in for consult on the next one.
Yeah, or give us a credit at the end of this one. I would love to get credit.
Yeah, just give us a shout out. You know what I'm saying?
No, I need in the rolling credits. You know what I mean? Get out the room, gang. Just let me get on that finale credit.
There you go.
But yeah, man. TV shaping up pretty good. I'm disappointed to know that we're going to lose a genre show, and it's probably not going to be replaced with anything for a while, because I feel like horror is really, it's lost its way with the kind of explosion of superhero. So,
to a degree, but you see the lesser channels picking it up. Sci-fi is doing a lot of good stuff with horror. So is USA.
That's true.
You know, USA's got Hunters, which was very compelling. Sci-fi's got Wynonna Earp, which I thought was going to be pure and utter green baby doo-doo, but actually turned out to be way deeper and more in-depth than I thought it was going to be. So that's good. There's a lot of good stuff coming out on cable for the horror flicks. Fox apparently has decided, you know, Fox has apparently realized that you can make horror movies and shows for almost nothing, and yep. they turn out hand over fist. They have... Yep. dived all the way into the deep pool, and they have tons of shit. So, I think we're gonna be okay for a little bit.
I heard they just re-upped on Scream Queens season 2, so.
Yep, they sure enough did. And they got another, I don't know if this is Fox or not, it might be another place, but, you know, there's a TV remake of The Exorcist, so we're gonna.
Yeah, I saw that.
That Exorcist season?
Yeah, I'm not feeling that.
I don't have too much. I don't have my. I'm not feeling it either. But I wasn't really feeling. Don't Breathe, and that turned out pretty good.
Yeah.
I am not a serial killer. Wasn't even on my radar. And
right.
I don't know if we've spoken about this or not. But Lights Out definitely wasn't something that was on my radar, and I enjoyed that shit to the fullest.
Okay. Well, so Lights Out you really, really liked. Aside from just the way it's set up, what else did you like about it?
You know, I think we've spoken about this before, but I really liked about that, and this is, you know, like this calls back to the title of the show, Get Out the Room. Like, typically in a horror movie, you know, I used to say I have a girlfriend, but not anymore. I have an ex who used to say that bad decisions are the basis of horror movies.
Yep.
And that does definitely ring true. But this is a horror movie that has no bad decisions in it.
Yeah.
Like, when they have the typical, get out the room, bitch, when they have that moment, these motherfuckers get out the room.
Yeah.
And shit still goes wrong.
Right. Like, they plan for the get out the room moment and even have backups and contingencies. And still exactly. take L's. And still take exactly. L's.
And so this is what would really happen to you. This is some real shit. Like, if this kind of thing was possible, yes.
Right.
But that's one of the things that I liked about it. It was like smart people making good decisions and still taking L's.
Yeah.
So you don't have to make that big leap of, you know, suspension of disbelief. It's a very small step. And that makes it scarier, because you think, well, what would I have done different? I would have done the same thing they did, and they still got hemmed up.
Yep.
So that really aids in the scary, to be honest.
Yep. Less is more. Less is more, man. You know, they didn't try to overdo things. They just said, hey, if I knew I had to pick as much light as possible to survive, wouldn't I get everything I possibly could? Now,
exactly.
One nitpick is that, like, they don't necessarily follow those rules in the opening kill scene.
No.
You know, but you got to introduce the villain and the power, so.
I think we can talk about the progression of experience there. You know, like, real, you know, again, small step of suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
Perhaps they didn't quite know what they were dealing with at that point. As the movie goes on, they definitely don't take any chances. So,
I think it's just a path. It's just an establishing shot. You know, you just want to establish the villain, you know, and power that she comes with.
Yes.
You know, unmitigated, unwatered down, you know, unbeknownst to the person that's about to get it. So, I got it. I understood it. But, you know, moving forward, they did everything they could to make that shit practical, and I appreciate that.
Yes. And, you know, it's really a testament to good writing. This is one of the things that we've talked about on TV shows a lot, where you see the writers trying not to write themselves into corners, so they leave themselves all these outs. But in the process of leaving themselves these outs, they write a bunch of plot holes. either intentionally or unintentionally, that upon further review, you look at and go, okay, well, this doesn't make any goddamn sense. What would this character do this if they knew that was going to happen, according to this? And that's really just the writers giving themselves an out to move forward. Mm-hmm. This was clearly writers who were confident enough in their craft to be like, yes, I'm going to write myself into a corner so that there's real stakes, and then I'm going to write myself out of that motherfucker. And they did it, to be quite honest. They pulled it off.
Yeah, I liked Lights Out much more than I thought I was going to. What slashes-wise, what were you going to give Lights Out? Actually, hold, before you do that, for those who don't know, Lights Out is a horror movie based on a really terrifying short movie by the same name. You can find it on YouTube. It is literally like 2.5-3 minutes. It is not
long. And it's terrifying. Don't watch it at night. Yeah. Turn the lights on.
Yep. Don't watch it before you go to bed. It is absolutely terrifying. This thing is, wherever there is no light, this thing can get you. So, just keep that in mind. What are the lengths you would go to ensure that there's always light around you?
I gotta be honest, man. This is getting a 10 for me. Like, I don't see any mistakes in the writing. I don't see any mistakes in the directing. Plot progression was awesome.
Okay. This is not on the same level as Alien. This is not on the same level as The Thing. This is not on the same level as the original Nightmare on Elm Street. This is not on the same level as Friday the 13th Part 2.
These are different movies in different times.
I agree. You can't
compare that shit to that.
We've got to protect the 10 rating. I can't just give away a 10 rating because a movie made some rules, followed through with it, and people didn't make dumb decisions. This shit has to be overwhelmingly excellent.
Okay, so this is what I'll say. There's no actor performances that were as fabulous as Christopher Lloyd's or Max Rucker's. I can knock it down a little bit for that.
Or even Heather Langenkamp's role from the original Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, there has to be, like, no. Okay.
Well, I can knock it down a little bit for that.
Okay.
It might have been a little bit, this might be unfair, but I feel like it might have been a little bit too slick.
Yep.
You know? Like, if we're looking at I Am Not a Serial Killer and how grounded and mm-hmm. grimy that film was,
mm-hmm.
this film is definitely a lot slicker. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Absolutely. It doesn't play as well in a horror flick.
It's a faster-moving film.
Yeah. But faster is actually, you know, but faster also is, at least in horror, you know, that's a selling point. You know, yeah. Because the slow horror films, unless you pull it off just right, they get to be plotting. So I guess I can knock it down a point and give it a 9. That's as far as I'm going to go. It's a legitimately good flip. People should see this joint.
I wasn't going to go that high. I was going to go somewhere around 7.5. Because I didn't feel like this is good. I didn't think that this was good as I Am Not a Serial Killer.
All right, so you got to tell me what's up. Why are you giving it a 7.5? Because we don't usually disagree this widely. I know.
I was just thinking that. We're usually, half a point apart. At most a point. To get to the point where we are, a point and a half apart, it's generally very off. I just felt like the movie as a whole, as well as they wrote their characters and as practical as the characters were, which is almost never a word you use when you talk about current horror.
Correct.
It did feel like a modern day horror. And by that, there didn't seem to be some of the world building that tends to happen in some of the older horror films. Like, they may take an extra 10 or 15 minutes to build the world so that when motherfuckers start getting got, you know the world and understand it better. They just kind of, the picture with the little girl that was just, you know, with the mother who was in the
institution.
The institution. You know, that was almost like, oh, so that's how you know who that is. All right, cool. And then, you know, the Freddy Krueger effect of, oh, yeah, they just put so much light on her, she turned into dust. What the fuck?
I feel like they explained that pretty well. So let me ask you this. Do you feel the world building was better in I Am Not a Serial Killer than it was in Lights Out? Because I'll be honest, in Lights Out, at least we got an explanation for what the fuck was going on.
No, and I felt like
the killer. It was just like, this is the thing that exists in this universe.
No. Not at all. You're looking at it from the complete other direction. I'm looking at it from the way that mental health was addressed. I felt like the mental health aspect of I Am Not a Serial Killer was addressed much more soundly than in Lights Out.
Oh, okay, I feel you. And I've been describing these characters as protagonists and antagonists. But to be honest, in I Am Not a Serial Killer, we really have two protagonists.
Correct.
And so the mental health aspect of one of the protagonists is explained very well and dealt with very well. But the nature of the second protagonist isn't dealt with at all. It's just something we're supposed to accept as is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look at the Lights Out and, you know, the way that they dealt with the little, you know, cloud girl, the way they dealt with her mental illness was roughly shock therapy. Don't be gay anymore. You know what I mean? Like, hey, yeah, don't be afraid.
That's true to the time period, though. Like, that's sure, real shit.
I agree. But it's just like a really quick and easy way to keep it moving. I didn't necessarily enjoy it. You know, and you don't truly see how much the mother has gone through or, you know, her mental health journey until almost the damn last frame of the movie. So.
True. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
You see what I mean? Like, and I know I'm nitpicking, but I feel like there's a responsibility to handle mental health better in films and in media all around. And I felt like, you know, I Am Not a Serial Killer dealt with it in a way that, you know, is so much more realistic because it is a journey. It is an ongoing thing. This is not something where they fix you. This is, you know, equipping you to live your life in a more healthy way. So that's also why. Yeah. You see what I mean?
Yeah, no. I feel that. I think that Lights Out is approaching the subject from a different direction. But I do understand what you're saying. And I'm more of a Smash Mouth kind of guy than you are anyway. I mean, we both like the slow build, but I think you like it more than I do.
I think I like it
so
more
for that reason,
I think I appreciate a slow build more than most, especially if the payoff is worth it. Micah Monroe does a great job here as the lead.
Yeah, he does a wonderful job. I feel like I've seen him before.
She. Micah Monroe, she's the girl from It Follows.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Let me just say, I rewatched It Follows maybe 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
It still holds up.
I
was still terrified.
I was gonna
even
say
though I knew exactly how it was going to end, I was still terrified.
I was going to say the exact same thing. Still held up well for me. I still found it tremendously enjoyable. And, you know, the camera angles and everything, still good.
Yes. No, it's something else. It's definitely something else. I hope that people will take note of that going forward.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's why I think we are so far apart on this particular rating.
Probably.
Yeah, I'm glad we talked about that. That's good. What else you want to talk about before we get out of here? I feel like we have 8 minutes left before we hit our marker. So.
Well, I just have really two things. One, well, this won't be a surprise for those who have listened a long time. I'm actually rewatching Fist of Legend, which is a remake of the Bruce Lee movie Chinese Connection.
Mm-hmm.
No, Fist of Fury. Sorry.
Fist of Fury, the first. Yeah.
And it's amazing. It was amazing the first time I saw it. It's still amazing. If you like Kung Fu flicks, watch that shit. secondarily, I've been watching this flick, this TV show called Quarry. And I can't tell you what channel it is. I think it's either IFC or Sundance, which are really kind of the same channel, but whatever.
Right.
Quick breakthrough. Marines who come back from the Vietnam War find out that they have a hard time getting jobs, and they get slowly lured into a life of crime, and it's dark and good, and there are twists that take you in places that you do not want to go. It's really good, really good. So that's Quarry. And then on some lighthearted shit, I watched this show on Netflix called Crashing. It's a British joint.
Okay.
About guys who are, I won't say they're squatting, but they're like, basically, they're paid to rehabilitate this old hospital. And in exchange for the rehabilitation of this hospital, they get to stay there for a very small amount of rent.
Okay.
So they're like custodians of this dilapidated hospital.
Yeah.
And the plot has absolutely nothing to do with that. It's all about relationship fuckery and confusion and gender and sexual identity confusion. It's fucking awesome.
Sounds good.
It's on Netflix. If you guys got Netflix, look that shit up. It's really good.
Sounds good. The wife and I have just been going through Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Me rewatching her watching for the first time Stranger Things, and as I told you guys about earlier, the Peaky Blinders. TV.
Shout out to my dude Burrow Mosley. He's on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Look him up.
Yeah, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, good show. Especially for folks who try to stay away from musicals, this one will surprise the shit out of you. I see how Rachel Bloom won a Golden Globe. Her ability and willingness to go to places that no other leading actress would dare go to on prime time in a sitcom. So, excellent work there.
Can we just also say that she's very attractive? On top of that. Can we just also add that in?
You just did, brother.
I'm just saying, she's got a brunch ticket.
Yeah, you.
Rachel Bloom, you ever come to Sacramento? I'm taking a brunch. You got it, free brunch on me.
All the bottomless mimosas, B.
All of them. All of the bottomless mimosas.
So yeah, that's what we've been watching. Tone, where can the people find you online, man?
People can always get me on Twitter at FakeWilliamCat, and that's pretty much it. You can also reach me at Get Out the Room. I'm always linked to those posts again on Twitter.
Yep. It's good, good, good to know. You can find me at DAE021. We've all started to kind of get back into stuff as the new things come up, and obviously as the most wonderful time of the year. The stabtastic September into October that comes every year. So as that comes up, that means there's going to be more Get Out the Room. So that's good for y'all. Next week, the Blair Witch sequel comes out. We're looking to have Brandon from Say Something Nice podcast come back. And they also want to touch on When the Bow Breaks. So, look out for the action. Absolutely. An extra black episode for y'all next week. But other than that,
and don't forget, I will definitely be live tweeting Lucifer, which isn't really horror, but it's kind of, but not really, but whatever. I like it. So yeah. If you're into that shit, I'll be live tweeting Lucifer. So
I like, you know, the fact you're still watching.
If you like that show, you can do that. If you're a writer of that show and you don't know what's going wrong with it, you can do that. I'll hook you up with the same deal I hooked up Grimm with.
Right. Get them back on track.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, hey, Tom, man, I appreciate you, man. You know, welcome back, brother. Thanks for coming, dude.
Oh, always, always. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, man. So, for all y'all listening, thank y'all. We appreciate y'all. And we get at y'all next time, man. All right?
All right.
Peace.
Peace.